Welcome to KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT News Team.
And welcome to this week's edition of Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Jared Griffin, and we have a very special show today. Every year, the Kodiak Arts Council, almost every year, puts on a spring musical as part of their performing arts series. And this year, they're doing Chicago, the famous Broadway musical vaudeville by Bob Fosse. And so that's going on this weekend and next weekend. We'll get more details on that in a second. But joining me in the studio to talk about Chicago and the show and live theater, live musicals in Kodiak are Chicago's director, Jesse Marlowe. Welcome.
Hello.
Music director, Angie Chervenak.
Hello.
And, oh my gosh, so many hats, right? Choreographer, or is it co-choreographer with Nikki and also playing Velma. Hazel De Los Santos, welcome.
Hello.
And to help me talk about Chicago is I needed just like Chicago's biggest fan is really what I needed. And so KMXT's news director, Kirsten Dobroth, who just happens to be the biggest Chicago fan.
I'm just here to fangirl, really.
So let's talk about the show. Let's start off with Jesse. I know it's a pretty big, famous show anyway. But maybe not a lot of people know exactly what it's about and who it's about. So what is Chicago?
Yeah, so Chicago is a musical vaudeville. So how I've been enjoying describing it is like it's a show and it's also a show within a show. So it's like you're watching both a play with a storyline and you're watching a vaudeville show. And the show's about two murderesses, Roxy Hart and Velma Kelly, kind of competing for the spotlight. If you do a quick Google, you will learn that it's also based off a true story, loosely based off. I think Roxy's story is more accurately true than Velma's, but you can actually find the old newspaper headlines about them. And yeah, it takes you through kind of like their competition with each other while they are incarcerated, trying to get free and to have their own vaudeville show.
Okay, and it takes place 1920s.
In 1920s, yes, correct.
So a lot of great music, a lot of great dancing. And Hazel can probably speak to this also, as also representing the Kodiak Arts Council today. Why Chicago?
Well, during The Little Mermaid last year, while myself as Flotsam and Esther as Jetsam, we were working on our choreography while Lissa was, you know, kind of seeing what we can do and what we were able to do. And I just remember doing some move. There was like some kind of choreography move that I did. And she goes, huh, what if we do Chicago next year? And I was like thinking about it, I was like, why not? And then as soon as I got employed, me and Katie were talking about our performing arts season for the upcoming year. And I brought it up. I was like, why don't we do Chicago? And she goes, all right, let's do it. And then she just bought the perusal script and then thus it came to be. And we're super excited to have it now.
And but this is also a passion project of sorts for Jesse.
Yeah, so I like to joke that the first time I saw Chicago, I think I was 7 or 8 when it first came out. And I don't know why my parents let me watch it, but they did. And I was obsessed. So when Katie was talking to me about possibly directing Chicago, she threw in a couple other musical options to like not make me feel boxed in. I was completely enamored with the idea of directing Chicago. I have not gotten sick of the music or the choreography yet. And as a director, that's saying a lot because I've watched the choreography and listened to the music so many times at this point. And I think that it's just such an awesome piece that really highlights a lot of what Kodiak is good at, which is dance. It is a huge, huge dance show. And we have so many fantastic women and a few men, but mostly women who are really showing off on stage.
So, so Kirsten, I'm sure I'm going to ask you a question, I guess, being the representative fangirl here. So the show's been around for over 50 years. What is the appeal?
Oh, I think for somebody who likes musicals, there's a distinct plot. You're like the storyline is really compelling, as you mentioned, but then it also does have these really big musical numbers. The dancing in it is like, you know, the Cell Block Tango. It's like iconic. And I'm so interested in asking about the music part of this, like bringing this to life, which there's not a lot of dialogue. A lot of it's really linked by these big musical numbers. Was that daunting for you?
This is the first time that I've been a vocal director with adults. I've conducted the orchestra when we in the past have had live orchestras, so that brought a different dimension. But to get folks to a point where they realize that their voice can tell the story, their voice can show all sorts of emotions and fill in that missing spoken dialogue was a challenge, a great challenge, and it is wonderful to see all the actors, the ensemble members evolve and share their story with their voice, emotions, and dance.
So this is your first show. So what has that, at least vocal directing, so how has that been for you?
It's been a fun challenge. It's a little different with people's voice. You know, if you're an orchestra, if you're playing in an orchestra, if you're conducting the orchestra, and something goes wrong, you can look at the strings or you can look at your fingering. Voices are raw. It's a raw skill, and it can be a little emotional for people and daunting. So challenging with care and concern, and then coaching with care and concern has been really what I've focused on. But I think folks are realizing that singing can bring joy to themselves and smiles, and then sharing that with the audience will be really important. And yeah, it's been very fun.
So even in a show that's about violence and murder and sex and you're just nodding your head.
I mean, yeah, no, it's a story, but based on reality, and there's a lot of tongue in cheek, you know. It's an adult show.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's talk about the content, because I think there are a lot of people don't quite understand, you know, exactly what the show is about, and the summary was very helpful. But yeah, let's talk about the content, because some people have noted that this is a little different than the brand of musicals that the Arts Council usually does in the past.
Absolutely. What's been so fun and also kind of vulnerable is, you know, having a very large group of people. I think we have like 27 people in the cast, and them being on stage, expressing themselves in a way that they feel comfortable, that they feel they're most confident. And a lot of that is through, you know, movement and costume. We really have been playing around with costumes, like what makes you feel confident, what makes you feel sensual, because that's how you should feel on stage. Because it's no secret that especially the women in this show use their sexuality to get them where they are wanting to go. And I think it's really empowering for the women that we have on stage to be able to play with that in a way that makes them the most comfortable. So you will see like a variety of different comfort levels on stage, but they all are, we kind of approach it as a very like consensual process where, you know, we were working with them individually to see, you know, what would make them the most confident at the end of the day.
And Hazel, your thoughts? You're the only one who's actually on stage in this room. So how was that? And what do you get from the cast?
I mean, when this was advertised, obviously there was a lot of controversy. But also, my biggest thing when it comes to this production is that it's different. And compared to what, you know, the people that have been in past productions to what we have now, there's a bunch of new faces on stage. And I also think that's what community theater is all about, is to be inclusive. And it's not just subject to one group of people or one specific group of people, but to everybody. And so to see all the different people on stage and girls that I've danced with since, you know, I was on the dance team and a lot of dance team alumni, and of course, like myself being on stage, I relate to my character as Velma Kelly so much, and just being in this production so much, because I am a burlesque performer. And when I started off with burlesque, I was scared. I did not know what I was getting myself into. When I auditioned, I just said, I want to sing. But obviously they see that I can dance as well, and they wanted to utilize all my talents. And then as soon as the element of burlesque came in, I was like, oh no, like this is not what I'm used to. But as soon as I, you know, my first performance happened, it was the most liberating feeling, and I was vulnerable, but I also felt my most confident, and all the insecurities that I've had with my body and with myself just went away when I was on stage, because everybody, or you know, everybody who's in the audience and who loves the art of vaudeville and who loves the art of burlesque, really appreciate that form, and they will support you in, you know, with whatever you look like on stage. And the best part about rehearsals too is, you know, some of these girls already get dressed up into character. Even when before we didn't have our costumes picked out, everybody was in fishnets or had garters, or you know, was wearing shorts and, you know, some mesh tops. And you can see that as soon as they put that, you know, put that outfit on, their confidence blooms. They're ready to get into character. They're ready to move on with the show.
If I could say one thing as the token fangirl here, it would be for people who maybe aren't familiar with the show as much. I liked your description of tongue-in-cheek, Angie, because it is. It's not like an explicit show, I think. And the first time I saw Chicago was the movie back when I think that came out my freshman year of high school. So I was about 14 years old. And, you know, there are, like you said, these elements of sexuality in it. But for me, as at that age, what really stood out was the musical numbers, the dancing. I mean, if you remember at the time, all the stars that were in it weren't known to be dancers or singers. And that really highlighted what multi-talented actors and actresses there are. And I'm sure for the cast, that's a really exciting opportunity to showcase that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think something that I like to harken back to is that because it is a vaudeville show, and the history of vaudeville is kind of like the original variety show. It's what a lot of American theater has kind of like stemmed from. And a lot of what we see in our, you know, like comedy shows, all that, it all started with vaudeville. And so when I was, you know, researching vaudeville and kind of conceptualizing this production, I thought, you know, a lot about how that meant all different types of people in this production. And so, you know, I had a lot of questions before auditions, like, well, like, do you want someone like me in the show? And I'm like, yes, absolutely. I want to see a variety of different people in the show. And I think that we have really achieved that.
Well, let's talk about the rehearsal process. So you, when did you audition? How long of a process has this been?
Well, we did auditions right before Christmas, so it's been a hot minute, but something that's unique about this musical is that every single musical number requires choreography. So it wasn't one of those rehearsal processes that we could, you know, hammer out in like a month or 6 weeks. We really needed a little extra time because there was so much choreography throughout this rehearsal process, including like, so let's say each scene has like two choreography rehearsals, and then you need a music rehearsal, and then you need a staging rehearsal because there's a scene within that choreography that also needs to be staged. So it's been pretty extensive.
Let's talk about some of the other who are your co-stars up there on stage with you, and we have some new names too.
Sure. So again, I play Velma Kelly, and Alyssa Hegg plays Roxy Hart. This is her first time, you know, playing a lead role. Billy Flynn, who is played by Mark Cameron, he is a traveling surgical tech, and this is his first time performing for the Kodiak Arts Council. Then, of course, we have Bianca Clark as Matron Mama Morton, and then we have Anthony White playing Amos Hart, and then we have Katie Oliver playing Mary Sunshine.
And I've seen a few rehearsals, and the vocals in these principals are, I think, some of the strongest I've seen in any one show that we've done. It's jaw-dropping, the range. And the characterization that they bring to the singing.
Belting is my element. Like, loud, jazzy, you know, belty pop vocals are my element. And again, doing musicals here since I was like 5, I would always use like my head voice because I would be, you know, more so in mezzo soprano range. This is the first musical where I can feel like I am myself. Like, I am the most myself, and I love it. Like, it's great. And the energy from, you know, the cast, it's just so uplifting and empowering. And like, we have fun with each other.
What's it like, Angie, working with these extremely talented principals, and then you've got this ensemble, which there are some singers in the ensemble, but the ensemble, like Jesse said, I mean, this is a dancing show.
I've been in Kodiak for a long time, so a lot of these people have been my students, so
like me,
it just fills my soul with joy to see Hazel, and I have to always not say, oh, I remember when you were 14. And doing but her talent growing.
It's so hard to do. The longer you live here, yeah. It's so hard to do.
Katie, when I first met Katie was Annie and I was Grace when we did Annie. So she's always been my little Annie. But watching her voice grow from that extraordinary young lady that she was when she played Annie to this funny part
over
that
the
she's
top
playing this time as an operatic reporter, it really is glorious. It is lovely. Several of the other people were students that have worked with in a variety of capacities, and then the other leads, learning more about them. I've known a couple of them professionally through the school district, and being able to see them blossom and grow is very heartwarming. And it speaks to Kodiak and the great talent base that we have, and finding the right place for the right people to fit in. Mm-hmm. Knowing that Mark is new to the island and is a traveling professional, and him finding a space to share his craft is also a joy. It's been lovely. And then getting the ensemble people that initially might have gone into auditions knowing that, you know, I'm a great dancer, I've danced for years and years and years. But once they heard from Jesse, and Jesse, she made it very clear, she said, all of my dancers will be singers. We're looking for dancers. And a few were nervous, but we worked with them, and they all are finding their voices. And I believe that that will bring them another level of confidence as they pursue other times on Kodiak stages.
Let's talk about the diversity of the cast. Also, you cast with a strong eye to make sure that different people are represented on stage. How are we seeing that in the cast?
You know, the funny thing is I think the audition process attracted all different types of people. So it wasn't really, you know, something like, it's always in the back of my head, like, I want, you know, to make sure that there are a bunch of different, you know, populations and character types and all that in represented. But, like, I didn't have to work too hard. They just showed up and they were great, which was awesome. But, you know, as a director, I've been in theaters that have been very mean. have been like, you know, like growing up in some of the theaters that I worked in, I was just, you know, called very rude things about my body constantly. And I, you know, I would always think, well, that's crap. Like what makes an ingenue an ingenue? And so I always challenge myself not to fall into like these types of like Velma Kelly is usually like a very tall, short hair, white woman. And you have to sit back and you're like, but like, why? There's literally nothing in the script that says that. But that's what we keep doing over and over again, because there's like these preconceived notions of who should be on stage. And so I just really try to kind of let that, you know, leave my mind, and really just cast who is best for the roles.
Yeah, I think it was Cheetah Rivera who was the first Velma, and just like you described, and then Bebe Neuwirth and then Catherine Zeta-Jones, like tall, you know, slam. And then also this show, and I might be wrong in this, but this might be the first show with a Filipina actor actually speaking Tagalog, like as part of the character on stage. And that's huge.
And it's super
strong. So,
and it's incredible. That's worth the price of admission. I mean, if I can say just really quick, every 5 minutes you're going to be saying, oh my gosh, this is worth the price of admission. You know, there's so many moments in this show where you're like, oh yeah, that's worth it. That is one.
Yeah. When I was approaching that, I was looking for like, because I was like, well, I don't, like a Hungarian actress, I'm not like, are we gonna get that? And but then I was like, what, like why does it have to be a Hungarian? So I was looking for someone who was bilingual, and what was so great about Cindy, who is playing Marie Corazon, is that she's speaking Tagalog, and there is going to be a solid amount of audience members that understand what she is saying. Whereas in every other production in Chicago I've watched, no one ever understands what the Hungarian's saying. And it's actually a really powerful story. It's, you know, probably the, like, she's kind of like the heart of the production in a sense that she represents a portion of the population who is incarcerated, who is not actually guilty. But because there's this language barrier between Uncle Sam and what she's saying, and no one's taking the chance to understand what she's saying, she is wrongfully convicted.
Yeah, I like that. I was nodding my head along with you, because having seen the production several times, the Hungarian part, I still don't know what she's saying, but it will be really interesting to see the audience reaction to that part, because that is a really important moment for the production, especially because it's so somber compared to a lot of the other numbers and parts of the show.
Well, I think it would be irresponsible to have a show about a bunch of criminals and, you know, not have someone that is there wrongfully convicted. Like that is still occurring now, and it's a really weak spot in the American justice system.
And that's the one part in this play, in the music, that when I watch it now, I start to choke, because she does a phenomenal job. Oh. It is just like...
Who is the actor again?
Cindy Monty. And she's a
middle school teacher.
A middle school health teacher who got transferred here from the Philippines. And so when she first translated her entire monologue, of course, I can understand what she's saying. Me and Nikki just look at each other and we just start like choking up, like, okay, this is going to be great. Like, I love the representation on stage, and I love even more, you know, as the performing arts programs for the Arts Council, that we will be seeing, like, you know, as I go through ticket sales, like I'm seeing, you know, a bunch of Filipinos coming to our show. So it's super exciting.
I was going to say also, as a performer, all with your different parts of the show that you bring to it. There's so many iconic numbers that I think people who have seen the show and even maybe people who haven't seen the show can probably like sing along a little bit too. Is there any number, if maybe this is like picking a favorite child, but like a favorite song that for all the times you've heard the music, you were saying like one song that you're like, oh, I can't get it. Or as a performer that you're like, this one's my favorite. I can't wait to perform it on stage.
For me, my favorite song that I watch is They Both Reached for the Gun. They are very animated and it's so high energy and it's great watching Roxy and Billy do their little ventriloquist act, you know, not to, you know, spoil the musical. And but
it's been around for 50 years. Yeah, I think we can.
Right. But, you know, somebody could be listening and be like, what's that? And they could look it up. But personally for me as a performer, my favorite song to sing is Class, which is the song with me and Mama Morton after, you know, Roxy and Billy just went to court. And of course, the reason why I love it so much is because I get to sing it with Bianca Clark.
And it's just dripping with irony, and it's another moment. It's worth the price of admission.
That song's really funny. It's also probably my favorite one to watch because it does not. I like to joke that it's like a Stephen Sondheim song in the at the end of Chicago, and I had no clue that it existed. It was cut from the movie. But it is probably the funniest number in the show, in my humble opinion. Everyone obviously connects with different things, but I never get sick of it. I think you know, when we talk about like humor being tongue-in-cheek, that's like definitely the definition of that.
We have a couple minutes to talk about, Jesse, the technical elements.
Oh boy.
What kind of, because we got talent, we got music, we got singing, but there's also spectacle.
Yes. I mean, it wouldn't be Chicago without spectacle. It's funny because I like to say, I like minimalist sets, and then I keep picking shows or agreeing to do shows that are anything but that. The set is large. Jared, how many light cues are in the show?
About 300.
Does that include spots?
Yes, that includes spots.
Okay,
yes,
good.
Yeah. I designed every single one.
Yes, you did.
There's a full scale sound design, you know, I'm trying to I keep reminding of everyone that we also have a haze machine, and they're like, please stop reminding us of that. Like, that is just another thing that we have to worry about. I'm like, yeah, that needs to happen. But yeah, it is definitely an undertaking from the tech's perspective. I feel for them. We're in the middle of Tech Week right now, and they're doing an amazing job, but it is not a walk in the park for them whatsoever.
Well, we have just under a minute left. So, Jesse or Hazel, what are the details? Where is it at? When is it at? How much is it at?
Let's give that to the girl that works for the Kodiak Arts Council.
Sure, yeah. So, Chicago will be playing this weekend, opening this weekend, March 3rd and 4th, Friday and Saturday. And next week, closing weekend, it's March 9, 10, 11, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all at 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. I think ticket prices are $27 for adults. I want to say $24 for seniors, but there is a $2 convenience fee. So, yeah.
All right, great. Well, any last...
No, I'm excited for it as well. I've gotten to see a few different productions of it, and it's always a little bit different, but always very exciting. So,
thanks to my guests to come on and talk about the Arts Council production of Chicago this weekend and next weekend. Director Jesse Marlowe, music director Angie Shervinak, and the person of many hats, arts council, choreographer, star, co-star of As Velma, Hazel De Los Santos. Thanks for spending your noon hour with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to Talk of the Rock.